President Trump makes his tax reform pitch in Indiana and threatens Joe Donnelly. Repeal and replace fails again, but what is dead may never die. That plus kneeling for the anthem and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 29th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, President Donald Trump unveiled his tax reform proposal at the State Fairgrounds in Indianapolis.
Trump calls it a middle-class miracle. His tax reform proposal would eliminate the estate tax and make the first $12,000 of income per earner tax-free. It would also create more breaks for having children, create three tax brackets beginning at 12%, and limit the tax filings of most Americans to one page. Trump was joined at the speech by several members of Indiana's congressional delegation, including Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly, who's up for re-election next year.
If Senator Donnelly doesn't approve it, because, you know, he's on the other side, we will come here, we will campaign against him like you wouldn't believe.
Donnelly issued a statement after the speech saying he works for Hoosiers and not the president or any political party. The Hoosier Democrat also expressed a desire for more details on the proposal.
Will his tax reform vote decide whether Joe Donnelly is in the crosshairs? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, will the president's remarks play into Donnelly's thinking on the vote eventually?
Well, I'm not sure if those remarks, the remarks that were made during the campaign event or the official speech on Wednesday will play into it. But certainly, I mean, Senator Donnelly got on Air Force One, flew here, rode to the event with the president, and he's clearly feeling the pressure. I don't know a lot of Senate Democrats that are in that position right now. Senate Democrats have a big uphill climb to win any seats next year. They could lose ground pretty easily. There's 35 seats up next year. 25 of them are Democratic seats. 10 of those are in states that the president won. So he's got to think long and hard about where he lands on this. Of course, the details are beginning to come out. The framework of this tax plan, of course, was released Wednesday. There's more detail out later in the week or this weekend, early next week, when the text of the bill actually comes out, so we find out more details. But it simplifies the tax code. It brings us from seven tax brackets to three, doubles the standard deduction, and does a lot of good things for the middle class and for really all taxpayers, corporations, and small businesses alike. So this is a tough vote for Senator Donnelly if Democrats are going to decide they're going to be locked up against the president.
Is it going to be hard for Joe Donnelly to vote against this tax reform bill?
Well, we're going to have to see what the other, quote, details are. We know this is welfare for the rich. We know that. I mean, we don't know what Donald Trump's tax returns are since he hasn't seen fit to let them out. But the year he let, the year that became public in 2006, if the alternative minimum tax, which is one of the proposals to be repealed, if that's supposed to equalize the burden of taxes on the rich, on the alternative minimum tax repeal alone in 2006, he would have saved $31 million in taxes. Okay? So he will save probably hundreds of millions of dollars by this proposal. This is designed for rich people. Yeah, it gives a couple of crumbs down the line so they can say it's middle class
reform.
Well,
it also
explodes the deficit, which is something Republicans don't seem to want to talk about now that there's a Republican in the White House. In fact, some Republican congressman said, well, that's something we talk about when there's a Democrat in the White House. But we don't have to be fiscally responsible when Republicans are in control. It's going to explode the deficit. It's the same trickle-down nonsense that we heard from Reagan and from Bush. It's supposed to generate all these jobs and massive job growth. And guess what? You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. This is the third time they've come up with the same kind of trickle-down idea. Cut taxes on the rich, and the economy's going to explode. It's never happened. And what's the definition of insanity? Repeating the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome?
John, Joe Donnelly, you know, gets this threat, whatever it is, but
it's a threat.
Whether he votes yes or no on tax reform, Republicans are going to make him one of the most targeted senators in the country. Does his tax reform vote really matter?
I think in the grand fusillade, if you will,
it'll be one of the bombs. But I think that you're absolutely right about the assessment. It's already to the point where, you know, the outpouring of attacks and offenses against Senator Donnelly have been going since, you know, the moment the last election was over, and actually before. So an individual vote, even one on something as potentially large as tax reform, probably won't have a decisive impact. But in the overall scheme of things, you know, they're going to really come after him. And he's going to have not just a series of votes, but a record to defend himself with.
So Donnelly, Mike mentioned Donnelly flew on Air Force One. He rode with the president. He's had this discussion. He had the dinner at the White House with only a select group of senators. He was one of the three Democrats. So he gets to talk about how he's trying to work towards bipartisan solutions. But is Trump's message a bit of a blessing in disguise? Because we saw a fundraising letter, I think maybe even that day, if not the next day, saying, did you hear what President Trump said about Joe? They're coming after him and you need to support us. Is it almost a blessing because he kind of gets to have it both ways?
If you're looking for a silver lining, I guess that's, and you're in that business. Yeah, I guess there is some element, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I guess in terms of energizing the proverbial base, and getting people who might be lackadaisical thinking, ah, he's an incumbent. And if there are people, I don't know, that don't, by the end of this, they won't be lackadaisical.
Yeah, probably not.
For the reasons you mentioned. But if they're thinking, oh, power of incumbency, I don't really need to get out, work, I don't need to open my wallet, my bank account, and help the campaign, this might be the kind of thing that would energize them. But I think you make a good point, Brandon, when you ask sort of the hypothetical, what if Joe Donnelly did in fact vote for tax reform? I can't imagine a scenario in which Donald Trump is going to cut a television spot for him or campaign for him, nor would he call off the dogs with whatever Republican. And I can't imagine he would say, you know, hey, this is my guy, go
right.
easy. So I don't know what the end result, you know.
So there's no upside, is what you're saying.
I don't know what it is. I can't imagine
and
what it is.
And the bill hurts Hoosiers.
Other than tax reform for middle class.
It's not tax reform for middle class.
All right, time now.
For the rich.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will President Trump's tax reform proposal have more success than health care reform has had so far? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, will Susan Brooks' endorsement of Luke Messer have an impact in the Senate GOP primary race? 30% say yes, a big impact, 29% a small impact, and 41% say it won't have an impact at all. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, another attempt by U.S. Senate Republicans to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act fell short this week.
The GOP mounted its latest health care reform effort ahead of a critical deadline at the end of September, when the threshold for such a vote rises to 60 rather than a simple majority of 51. But opposition from, among others, Republican Susan Collins of Maine and Arizona's John McCain scuttled even a floor vote on the latest bill. The measure would have shifted more control over health care to the states, but some estimates projected significant cuts to spending and coverage, including potentially hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers whose affordable health care options would be eliminated. Governor Eric Holcomb backed the legislation.
And Eleni, how many times will health care reform be declared dead?
Well, you know, they're at the deadline now, the end of September. Now they need 60 votes to pass it. So they're not going to pass what the ridiculous proposals they've come forward with, which would have taken anywhere between 30 and 40 million people off health care and taken away the protection against pre-existing conditions being discriminated against and the lifetime cap. Now what they need to do is to fix what needs to be fixed. There's never been a major piece of legislation, whether it's Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, that didn't need changes to it after implementation. The Republicans have blocked that since President Obama called for it in year one of the Affordable Care Act, and now they're trying to sabotage it by not paying the subsidies. They need to get with it to fix the problems with Obamacare, and everybody realizes that there are some difficulties with that that need to be addressed, and stop trying to take health care away from people. They can't govern. They have majorities, and they have the presidency, and they cannot govern. They're completely ineffectual as leaders.
Does tax reform now on the front burner, does that actually help the health care conversation that goes on behind closed doors in D.C.? Has it helped to maybe not have as many spotlights shining on it?
Yeah, you can only fight a policy war on so many fronts, or a legislative war on so many fronts, at least front and center. But the complications with Obamacare right now in Indiana that we learned this weekend, or late this week, is that premiums are going up 20% in 2018. So we have to, in my opinion, get away from this. The context of this political discussion has been on repeal, which is now, it's died how many times? Because the context of that discussion is that you're taking things away. What that bill really did was it restored a lot of authority to states. It allowed states flexibility to design a Medicaid program like Indiana has that fits their local needs, build insurance policies that fit your local needs and your local markets. It did a lot of good things in transferring control of the insurance market back to states.
And the money.
We have to do
The money from states who adopted it to states who didn't.
And from the context of the Medicaid program, they proposed block granting the Medicaid program back to states. The states have control. Don't have to ask for permission from the federal government all the time. These are good ideas that can, from a policy standpoint, improve the insurance market. We have to get away from this idea, though, that we just have to delete Obamacare and then everything's going to be fine. It's too one-dimensional of a political and policy discussion.
I talked about a blessing in disguise. Is the now 60-vote threshold also perhaps a blessing in disguise? It will require more bipartisan. It will require bipartisanship, period, certainly more of it. Maybe not the whole enchilada, but does it move the conversation forward in a way that it couldn't when repeal was more possible?
Because it allows, I guess your thinking is, it allows Republicans to say, we tried everything we could, we went to the mat, and we have no option now. Our only recourse is to go through the committee process and actually draft legislation the old-fashioned way, you might say. Perhaps. And it does probably spare those Republicans who made this the cornerstone of their campaigns, and it spares their constituents being reminded yet again of the inability of that member of Congress, that senator or member of the House, to deliver on the promise. Because they've had many reminders, as has been noted. I sometimes feel as if, you're right, there's a portable defibrillator that somebody's going around behind the bill, and every time it codes, you know, it's like, bring them back, and they're zapping
them
again.
It's out of juice.
The cord is not that long anymore. But
infrastructure needs.
John, takes it off the table a little bit.
Yeah, John, do we see major health care reform legislation on the floor of the Senate before the end of the year?
Oh, I can't imagine. And if we don't, it's going to be kaput because next year, of course, is the election year. But I think John's analysis is right. We have to get back to this notion of legislation that goes through a process. And until we get away from this idea that every bill is a political tool to use for or against someone, and then we're never going to get anywhere with this or any other legislation. Even if it gets passed, as did Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, it will never be able to get to a point where it does get the fine-tuning that it needs because there won't be anybody on the other side of the aisle that cares about it. So we have to get back to a participatory democracy where people from all sides of the political spectrum work together. And until we do, it's going to be gridlock.
You could argue that's why there were failings in the initial
that's exactly
Affordable Care
right.
Act, because there wasn't that sort of committee
that's
process.
That's right.
So to be fair, I think we might have to abolish elections to avoid using bills as
political
tools.
Well, maybe we abolish the Tea Party, and then we could get some...
It doesn't exist anymore.
I was just going to say.
Well,
Michael Bryan has established the Tea Party instead.
Todd Rokita is a charter member.
Peaceful protests during the national anthem at sporting events took on a new life this week as politicians, including Todd Rokita and Luke Messer, got involved.
He's fired!
The controversy kicked into high gear after President Trump, at a campaign rally in Alabama, indirectly referenced NFLer Colin Kaepernick, who kneeled during the national anthem last season to protest inequality and police brutality. Trump told the crowd NFL owners should fire anyone who kneels and cursed out any such players. Luke Messer's campaign tweeted he agreed with Trump and players should stand for the anthem. Todd Rokita sent a campaign email saying he's disgusted by the athletes who kneel for the anthem. He also said the NFL should create a conduct code for the issue and that football players entering the league should conform to the, quote, patriotism of the sport.
John Schwanes, is this a winning message for Rokita and Messer here in Indiana?
I wouldn't make that the sole element of my campaign. However, what it has going for it is it's simple, and you can have a visceral reaction to it. You don't have to think much about it. You know, with every other issue we've talked about here, with what are the ramifications of fine-tuning the tax code? You know, what does it do to the home mortgage deduction? What does it do to, you know, the deduction for state and local taxes? You've got to think a lot about that. Same thing with, you know, when you talk about medical and healthcare issues. You know, kids 26, should they be on their parents or not? This, basically, you have a feeling, sentiment one way or the other, you know, that it's
stand
either
or kneel.
It's stand or kneel. So maybe how about repeal the kneel? Could be the slogan.
Wow.
We're all into the, every campaign seems to be trying to find the right.
Nice.
But it's, I don't think it's going to change any opinions either. If this is an issue that you're passionate about, just like flag burning back, you know, the many times there were attempts to outlaw flag burning, I'm sure it'll be a still a red meat issue. But for those who, it's not going to change any opinions.
Is this something that needs to be part of the political conversation in this country?
Well, it's going to be part of the political conversation in the country. Unfortunately, John's right. People don't think.
Wait, unfortunately, I'm right.
No, no. Fortunately,
okay.
You're right.
Okay.
Unfortunately, you're right. Your point
you.
Is well made.
Thank you.
People aren't thinking. They don't think. I don't care whether it's easy or not. You have to think about these things and be willing to look at a different point of view. Even if you have that visceral reaction to somebody kneeling in protest to the flag, your first reaction shouldn't be to boo them or to shout at them or to yell at them. It should be to say, what's up? Why are you doing this? And then have a conversation about it. We can't do that.
Yeah.
There's no way we can do that. And until we do, I'm sounding like a broken record here, but until we do, we can't advance. We can't make any progress
as a country. Attorney General Curtis Hill wrote an op-ed about this today as we taped, basically, in which he talked about he chooses to stand. But it's also important to respect and support the rights of those who choose to kneel during the anthem. Is that perhaps, if you're a politician, the right middle course in a place like Indiana?
I think actually it is, and I think it has to do with the fact that the Attorney General is an African American, and this whole issue is another one of the dog whistle issues we hear so much about. It's about race more than anything else. And I find it really ironic that whether you think you have to stand or should stand, as many of us do, or kneeling is okay, the idea that you're booing during the national anthem seems to me completely inconsistent with respect for the flag and the national anthem. And that's what the people who were opposed to the kneeling were doing. Anybody see that as a little ironic?
It's also goofy because among those people who were booing or were kneeling last week was Melvin, who had two interceptions. So they boo him during the national anthem. They're cheering their brains out for him when he has an interception in the game.
Yeah, and
they're just not thinking.
The whole remark by Rokita that this is patriotic, that this game is patriotic. Are we going to have
patriotism of the NFL?
Well, yeah. Are we going to have for lacrosse meets? Are we going to have Indian war cries or something? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Did Curtis Hill hit the nail right on the head in this one?
Well, I think John Schwanes is right. Tax reform is going to be really good for
That's
the middle class.
Man, I think
double the standard deduction. The mortgage deduction is maintained.
I think I just heard it.
Tax reform is great for the middle class. I think
Trump
there's a lot of different opinions
richer.
Here. But in my house, my son's a Boy Scout. My 11-year-old son's a Boy Scout. When the national anthem comes on in our house, he literally stands up and puts his hand over his heart. And then he looks at me because I'm sitting down at home. And I've literally never done that. And he looks at me like I'm an idiot, which is not an uncommon thing to have happen in my house.
But yeah, it'll get worse before it gets better.
All right, Todd Rokita has an online ad out this week hitting Luke Messer hard over his support or alleged lack thereof for President Trump.
Rokita has long pushed the message that he's the candidate for Hoosier Trump voters, and that effort includes the backing of Indiana Trump campaign leaders. A new ad makes the case more harshly.
Clearly, Congressman Messer, he doesn't know when to be presidential, does he?
Yeah, he hasn't shown it yet. I mean, that's the reality of it.
If you like Donald Trump, you won't like Luke Messer.
For his part, Messer has repeatedly backed the president since Trump took office and references him in both campaign and congressional materials.
John Katzenberger, how much more does this ad hurt Luke Messer after President Trump, during his speech, called him Mike Messer at this week?
Got kicked right out of the Gospels, didn't he? Mike, and not even a Mark, you know, and just
President George W. Bush once called Todd Rokita Todd Rokiki. So there's a long history in
Indiana. Look at that.
Yeah, four congresspeople being misidentified.
Well, I look forward to both of those in ads that'll come out soon.
Look, this is a vicious ad. I mean, it is the kind of thing you would expect to see in the last week or two of a campaign, not, you know, this many months before the primary. The primary, by the way, this is, you know, Republican against Republican. So this is a very hard-hitting ad. But Congressman Rokita has put all of his chips on the table. They are all there, and they all say Donald Trump. And if Trump's popularity remains high between now and then it'll help him. But, and we've seen how volatile the president is in terms of the way he conducts himself, he could be below, you know, zero by the time the election rolls around, and that'll hurt Todd Rokita.
You talk about this fairly hard-hitting ad this early in the cycle, but is Todd Rokita trying to really establish a narrative here about Luke Messer?
I suppose, but I think John's exactly right. I mean, this is an eternity between now and the 2018 election, and you don't know what the fates will hold for Donald Trump. I mean, you wouldn't, even if you had the most humdrum, predictable, conventional office holder in the history of the world, there's still factors that you can't factor in. But then you insert a president who is mercurial by nature and sort of known to change opinions and stances and say things that
he
may not want to say. I mean, it's a big gamble. But I did check. There are at least three Mike Messers that he might have been talking about. There's an MMA guy from Nebraska.
Okay,
there's an insurance agent from Missouri.
Okay.
And there's a kid's singer from Manhattan that leads the Stinky Sock Band. So
Manhattan,
those
hope maybe, that's
maybe
real.
That's what Donald
this
Trump
might be better
about.
Than the
that's really post show trivia.
Yeah. Well, this will be no
Ron is
no,
really
no,
good at
here's
that.
What I'm saying. Remember we had the Mexican the mariachi band? Now we're going to have the Stinky Socks band. Fight fire with
Let
fire.
Let me ask this in terms of I mean, for a guy whose campaign is branded I Like Luke and whose last name doesn't appear on a lot of those campaign materials, how upset do you think Luke Messer is that Donald Trump got his name wrong?
I don't think it's that important at all. I think in the to the comment is, will the president be under 0%? Not among Republican primary voters. He's more popular now and appears almost more as a victim of elements outside of his own control at this point among Republican primary voters. So I think that is a smart move by Todd Rokita. But look, a lot of even primary Republican voters had to come a long way to get where they now are in support of President Trump. It 2 years ago, they weren't there. We were all over the map, right? And so there's been, especially in Indiana, when then Governor Pence, now Vice President Pence, joined the ticket, a lot of Republicans had to do some soul searching and decide where they really needed to be in this race. Not every Republican was like Luke Messer had a camera in his face all the time, right? So a lot of people had to come along.
They went that way. That's right. The question is, are they going to be there in two more years after having this buffoon in there as president that long? It's, you know, what's amazing about this is you're absolutely right, Mike. This is exactly what he needs to do to win the Republican primary. But when he does that, he puts himself so far to the right that if Donald Trump implodes, as he has shows every ability to do before 2018, he's going to be killed in the general election, and that's what he deserves.
We saw this sort of play out in the Alabama Senate race, the Senate primary race. Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell got involved, obviously sort of an incumbent in that situation. There isn't an incumbent, obviously, in this primary race. But do you see Donald Trump and or Mitch McConnell getting involved in this Senate race and picking sides? And if so, would Todd Rokita be their candidate?
Well, that's, I think, the better question with regard to what may happen. Because, they'll become involved, but McConnell's approval ratings are, you know, lower than the president's in many regards. And remember, the president lost that primary in Alabama and then turned around within, you know, a few minutes and was all for the judge who won. So I think it'll be interesting to see what effect it would have for
which one of the candidates.
The dynamics are slightly different. We never bring up, because we're normally talking about Messer and Rakita going at each other, and we never mention that, like, Mike Braun, the state rep from Jasper, is a totally legitimate candidate.
Absolutely.
And so this is the dynamics of this
race. With a lot of place.
As opposed to Rakita and Messer, he's a
I think it does help him.
For those who say
he's definitely, he can play a first
sort of spoiler. This is the one time you want to keep your head down for a while if you're the third.
Well, finally, some fans, including notably a Colts fan from Carmel, burned their football gear and in some cases their season tickets in response to those national anthem protests we talked about. Mike O'Brien, I can imagine you've wanted to burn your Bears stuff for one reason or another, including last night's debacle. But do you think teams really care if you're burning things when they already have your money?
I hope so, because, I mean, if you're burning it all, you're probably not going to replace it. But I've got a Jay Cutler jersey that I almost gave to Goodwill, and I pulled it out of the pile at the last second. Like, and I just couldn't do it.
Goodwill might not take it.
Of all the protests you can do, I mean, some people very legitimately have a response to these anthem protests. But do you think burning gear and tickets is an effective way of expressing your displeasure?
No, it's not, except that you gave it coverage, so it gets something. But otherwise, all it does is pollute the air.
Don't forget the thousands of the social media traffic are coming from out of Russia. So
that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Katzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, as a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.